Okay.
There we go.
So we'll discuss when science and Torah collide, does Jewish law change? So as we see, it's a very broad topic. We'll just give a couple examples tonight. We'll see how far we get. Different examples. The Gemara says one thing, and modern science seems to say something else, or definitely says something else. How do we deal with this conflict? So the first case we'll deal with is the Gemara in Shabbos. In general, the Mishnah tells us in Shabbos about 39 prohibited activities on Shabbos. And one of the 39 prohibited activities is the tilas neshama. You're not allowed to kill, you can't do shechita. You can't kill an animal on Shabbos. You can't kill a human on Shabbos either. You can't kill a human during the week. But there's a, normally you're allowed to slaughter an animal. However, on Shabbos, you're taking the life and you violate a biblical prohibition, hence it's prohibited. So the Gemara here says in Shabbos, it says it's 107b. The Gemara talks about a horei kina b'Shabbos. What about killing lice on Shabbos? So I know many parents are happy to kill lice on Shabbos, especially when the kids are infested. But there are other issues besides killing the lice. There's issues of pulling out here, but that's a separate discussion. But the Gemara says you are permitted to kill lice on Shabbos. And the question is why? If you can't kill an animal on Shabbos, why can I kill a lice? So the Gemara says because killing lice is different than killing a regular animal. Why? Because a cow, where does a cow come from? A cow comes from another cow, mommy. It's born from another cow, and eventually every animal has a parent, has a mother. However, the Gemara says, however, keen about lice, they come from schmutz, they come from dirt, basically spontaneous generation. There's no eggs, there's no birth, it's just that they come out of inanimate matter. And therefore, that's why one is permitted to kill lice. And the Rambam, who was a doctor and knew the science of his time as well, very well, that's why he leaves out many Gemaras, and he says that everyone knows the ABC of science, spontaneous generation, and that's why you're allowed to kill lice on Shabbos. So the problem is, of course, Wikipedia is never wrong, but in this case it's right anyway. So in Wikipedia they say spontaneous generation is an obsolete theory regarding the origin of life from inanimate matter. And basically that was the common understanding of science during that time. And it says basically it wasn't fully proven until the 19th century by Louis Pasteur. So basically today, modern science does not believe. Everyone who knows the ABC of science knows there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. So we have an apparent problem. The Gemara, the Halacha, says you're permitted to kill lice on Shabbos, and presumably because of spontaneous, they assume there was spontaneous generation. But now that we know that there is no such thing as spontaneous generation, so does the Halacha change? Could I still kill lice? Or do I say, no, lice is just like an animal, and just like you can't kill, is this, are we in violation of Netilas Neshama or not? In fact, interesting, when Rav Schacht always says over the story, when he was in Yeshiva University, when he was taking a science class, and Rav Soloveitchik, the one from Boston, his brother, I think it was Rav Shmuel Soloveitchik, so he used to teach science in Yeshiva University. So when this whole, I guess during his time, it came out, the whole issues, I guess they were discussing spontaneous generation, the Gemara, so Rav Shmuel Soloveitchik said over that when they first came out, when Louis Pasteur disproved spontaneous generation, so everyone was going crazy. What are we going to do with the Rambam? The Rambam says spontaneous, everyone knows the ABC, it's spontaneous generation. And then the communists, so of course they're against spontaneous, you know, they have to prove there is, because they're atheists. They want to say there was no first animal, it just came from, so therefore, you know, if you pay enough money, you could find any field, like you see in the courts, everyone brings their own expert lawyers to prove their own case. For enough money, you can find any doctor, lawyer, etc. to prove your case. So they paid a bunch of scientists, and they said, no, of course there's spontaneous generation. And he said, when the communists came out, and said it was proof that the rabbis were dancing around in the street. Thank God we saved the Rambam. So Rosh Moshe Rabbeinu, it's ridiculous. Everyone knows that, number one, the Russians are communists. They don't believe in God anyway. So why would you take what they say seriously anyway? And secondly, everyone knows it wasn't a serious scientific test. It was just they paid some scientists to say it. So the bottom line is, what do we do with the Rambam? Rambam elaborates, but the Gemara, we have a conflict between medical science clearly says there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. So with Isaac Leprenti, the Pachad Yitzchak, not the Pachad Yitzchak we know today, though he's not around today, but Rav Huttner, who was Rosh Yeshiva in Chaim Berlin, Coney Island Avenue in Brooklyn, and he came over from Europe with other Gedolim. So that's the Pachad Yitzchak. He writes different Svarim, mostly Machshava, but he has other Svarim. This is Rav Isaac Leprenti. He wrote like an encyclopedic book, and he deals with these issues. So one approach would be, it's very simple, that now that we know that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation, so therefore you're prohibited to kill lice today. In other words, the Gemara was obviously basing it, it's a fundamental question we'll get into more, but when the Gemara gives us some scientific knowledge, is that based on like a halacha Moshe Misinai, a tradition, or no, they spoke to the doctors of the time. In fact, some of the rabbis could have been doctors, and based on the science of the time, they came to the conclusion. So that's what Rav Isaac Leprenti said. Obviously, they based it on the science. That was the cutting edge then, spontaneous generation. Now that we know that there's no spontaneous generation, so the science is wrong, the halacha should change. In other words, the principles always stay the same. So the principle is, if you kill an animal that came from a mommy, it's Natilas Neshama. The reason why you're allowed to kill lice on Shabbos is because you thought they came from schmutz, from dirt, from inanimate matter. Now that we know it's not true, one approach would be, so that's it. So it'll make a lot of parents unhappy now you can't kill lice, but that'd be one approach. However, that seems to be the minority view. There are those who suggest that, but many still say that you still can kill lice. And so according to that approach, everything's fine, there's nothing to discuss. That the halacha is based on, all the medical things are based on the doctors of our time or their time, and therefore once we find that the facts have changed, so you take the same halachic principle and you apply it, and whatever result you get, you get. So that's one approach. That's from Rav Isaac Leprenti, the Pachad Yitzchak. However, others say, many assume, I will get to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Desker, others want to say that the halacha is the same. So within the second school of thought, which I'm saying is you're allowed to kill lice on Shabbat, either they're going to come up with another reason why you are allowed to kill lice, or they're going to say that maybe perhaps we'll see the Gemara was based on some other tradition, so we'll see. So maybe we could combine the two. So this Rav Desler has an interesting approach about wildcats, and then I'll take his approach and we'll apply it to here. So I think the wildcats or whatever, those animals that with the claws, and it's called the Drus, it's a Gemara in Chulin on page 53a. The Gemara talks about an animal that I think that was attacked by wildcats. I might be getting the animal wrong, but it's not relevant for us. No, it's not in here. The Gemara says that this animal, I think it's a wildcat, when it claws another animal, this other animal, the victim, is called the drusa. A drusa is there's halachas of treifa. So we know we say treif like something's not kosher. That's a generic term. The halachic term for treifa, which is also is not kosher, but it means there's a hole in its lung. There's something wrong with the animal. It's going to die within 12 months. It has some hole, something wrong in the body. So therefore, this animal, which is attacked by a wildcat, is called the drusa, which is one of the treifas. So this animal is going to die within the year. That's what the Gemara says. So Rav Desker points out, so what do you have to do now? So that's the halacha. Again, we can see drusa might be different than lice, but he says it by a treifa. He says it like this. He says, the Gemara tells me this animal is a treifa. So now, okay, that's a given now. It's based on tradition, based on we have a halacha Moshe Mishina, whatever it's based on. Now we have to go to modern science and try to figure out what's the reason for it. So during the time of the Gemara, what did the scientists say? What's the reason? You ask, why is it that you go to the scientists and ask them, why is it when a wild cat attacks an animal as opposed to animal X, it doesn't become a trefa? What's it based on? So the scientists of the day told them, you know what it's based on? It must be that a wild cat secretes venom, and therefore the poison goes into the body, and that's why it dies within a year. That's what they thought then. Now we all know that's not true. Wildcats don't have venom. So therefore, what he says, you speak to the, so you have to come on now with, so the theory is wrong. It's clearly not based. So now you speak to the doctors of your time and say, tell me why. So the doctors say, you know why? They say, because the claw, when the wildcat claws its victim, it goes much deeper into the skin, into the body than the other animals. And therefore the dirt gets in and that causes infection, and that's why it dies early. So the point of Rav Dessler is, Rav Dessler wants to preserve the halacha, but at the same time say we go to ask the modern doctors what's the reason for different things. So in the case of the Drusa, he's claiming that's clearly based on a tradition. We know that's the halacha, and therefore the only question is why. So the question is, what about by lice then? So Rav Shlomo Zalman says something in Svara, similar to, but totally different. He says like this. He says, so we know right now I'm drinking water, and we know there's a prohibition in the Torah of, and we just read about it in Parashat Shmini, eating non-kosher, gives a list of the kosher animals, etc. We don't have meat and milk together. We don't have fish and meat together, we'll get into. So it goes to the different laws of kashrus. And then it says you can't eat bugs. You're not allowed to have bugs. It's a big chiddush. The Torah is telling me I can't eat bugs. The Torah is telling me it's a biblical prohibition. Why you would eat bugs? Obviously, most people aren't going to eat bugs. But today with the lettuce and other things, it might come up. But obviously, the Chiddush HaTorah is normally something which isn't edible, is not, if you eat a raw piece of meat that's treif, so you probably don't violate a biblical prohibition. Something which isn't the derech achila, something which is in roi l'achila, fit to be eaten, it's not considered, it's only a rabbinical prohibition. So bugs, the Chiddush, even though bugs are inedible, maybe some people like bugs, I don't know, but bugs are inedible, yet it's still biblically prohibited. So there's a biblical prohibition in general to eat bugs. So we all know, or we don't know, but medical science tells me that right now as I'm talking, I'm swallowing hundreds of bugs, microscopic bugs, there's probably bugs in the water. So what's going on here? I'm violating a biblical prohibition every second, and then there may be many. So obviously what? The Torah, the Rav Shlomo Zalman tells us and others, obviously when the Torah tells us there's a prohibition to eat bugs, it's only bugs that we could see with the naked eye. I'm not obligated to walk around with a microscope and examining everything I do. When the Torah tells us, the Torah wasn't given to angels, it was given to human beings. So for instance, let's say someone came over, Rav Shechter always says over the story, someone came over to him with his pair of tefillin, and the halacha is the tefillin have to be squared. So this guy comes over to him and says, I want to know, is my tefillin kosher, are they squared? So Rav Shechter looks at them, yeah. They look square to me. Yeah, they're fine. The guy says, no, they're not square. I'm a dentist. I work with tiny fillings every day, and I know what square is, and this isn't square. So Rav Shechter said, you don't have to worry about it. Obviously, your eyes are like a special instrument. You're used to working with specific, but you're not the normal person. Square means square. But if the average person thinks it's square, we don't have to take out the measurements and see what the exact legal definition, of square is. We go ahead, we go by the naked eye. Or similarly, Rav Moshe has a tshuva regarding Hilchas Nida. Let's say when a woman has a bedika, and she's not sure if it's red. And the case is, the only way you can tell it's red if you take out a microscope. You can't see it's red from the naked eye. But if you take out a special instrument, you can see it. So Rav Moshe says that the woman is tahar. We have no obligation to go ahead and use an instrument to find out. If I can see it's red, it's red. If I can't see it, of course, if a person is colorblind, that doesn't mean it's not red. Or if a person can't see it, let me close my eyes and eat the bugs. That doesn't work. But it means is that it's invisible, we can't see it, that we don't have to worry about it. So that's what Rav Shlomo Zalman says is the pshat here. So we always assume, he said, you're right. In theory, he agrees. If the halacha of lights was based on spontaneous generation, and now we know that there is, and now we know there isn't any, then you're right, the halacha would change. But he says that's not the pshat in the Gemara. He says the pshat in the Gemara when it says ainu, it doesn't mean that it's spontaneous generation. It means halacha. These were so small, these little eggs that they come from, these tiny things that the lights come out of, is invisible to the naked eye. Of course, Chazal knew that they came from a mom and they came from an egg. But the halacha is telling me we view this as spontaneous generation. In other words, so for instance, the Gemara says by mushrooms, this is a discussion in the Gemara, we make a shahako niyeh bedvaro on mushrooms. The question is why vegetables, we make tomatoes, we make a boy pri adama, cucumber, why shahako? So the Gemara tells us because it gets most of its sustenance, or gets the sustenance from the air around it, not from the ground. So whatever that, you know, however they knew that, they, I don't know. But, you know, from tradition maybe. So the question, but obviously everyone knows today, obviously mushrooms get, scientists will tell me, but I see mushrooms do get the sustenance from the ground. So the terrace is not akasha. That type of nourishment, halakha, we're not viewing that as halakhically significant. In other words, there's the physical reality, and there's the halakhic reality. So it's true, these lights come from eggs, or maybe this mushroom does, but halakha is telling me, from a Jewish legal definition, we view it as it's just coming from the air. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, this is the pshat in the Gemara. Just like, it's prohibited to eat bugs, but I eat bugs all the time, I can't see. So when we're saying pi halacha, these aren't considered bugs. These aren't the bugs. Let's say these are the kosher bugs. These aren't the bugs. You're allowed to eat the kosher bugs. You can't eat the bugs that you can see. So similarly here, that's what the Gemara meant. The Gemara meant to say that these are so small that we view them as spontaneous generation. That's why you can kill lice. That still applies today. The halacha is you can kill lice on Shabbos because it's not based on spontaneous generation. It's based on the fact that pi halacha, we say it's not significant, and that's why. But Echanami said, if you couldn't come up with another reason, he would agree in principle that you wouldn't be able to kill lice. So Rav Shlomo Zalman agrees in principle with the first school, except he says that. But he just redefines what the Gemara means. He says, if you don't have to do that, you don't. If you could come up with a reason to fit in halacha with the medical science, so there's no reason to reject the halachas. That's his approach on this Gemara. So the first approach is basically, that's it. Halacha, if it's halacha is based on information which is wrong, then obviously we go back, we get the right information, we take the halacha, apply it, and come out whatever the halacha is. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says, in theory, I agree, but in this case, the Gemara was never saying spontaneous generation. It was just saying is, it's like the bugs, it was so small, we don't view them as halachically speaking eggs, we view them as spontaneous generation. There's a third approach, which goes into a different area in terms of, even let's assume we know the facts are wrong today. We know there is no spontaneous generation. But the question is, what about Bizman HaGemara? The question is, during the Gemara, what did they think? I mean, what did the scientists think during the time of the Gemara? So there's the Dor Ravi, the fourth generation. His name is Rav Moshe Glasner. He was the fourth generation from the Chasam Sofer, the first one to be called Moshe. So he's a very independent thinker, very interesting thing. So he writes in his Sefer Anchulin, he has some interesting ideas. So he says as follows. But first I have to give it, to get to another answer, I just have to give it some background info. So we know the Torah tells us in Parasha Shoftim, you have to basically, it talks about listening to the Beis Din Agadah, listening to Sanhedrin, and don't turn away from them right or left. The Pasuk says, so there's Rashi quotes a famous Sifri on that Pasuk. What does it mean? right and left. So the Sifri quotes, the Rashi quotes the Sifri, that even if the rabbis tell you right is left, or left is right, you have to listen to them. And certainly if they tell you right is right and left is left, you listen. So Rashi quotes from the Sifri that even if they tell you, basically it seems to be, a simple reading of Rashi seems to be, you follow the rabbis even if they're wrong. You follow the leadership even in error. In fact, there's this, I don't know if anyone read the book, The Cain Mutiny. Did anyone hear the book, The Cain Mutiny? By Herman Wouk. And he wrote, the name of his, Cain was the name of the ship. Mutiny is what happened on the ship. And what happened, what the book is about. In fact, he used to teach in YU many years ago for a couple of years. So he was speaking to the class. He said, I'll tell you how I got the name of my book from. I got the idea, not in the name of the book, but the message of the book is basically how the captain basically goes wacko. But the point being is, you're on the ship, captain's always right. You're on an airplane, pilot, so even if he's telling you something ridiculous, you have to. So he said, I got it from this Rashi. Rashi says, you follow the rabbis, right is left. So one of the boys raised his hand and said, I don't want to disappoint you, but you obviously didn't learn the Ramban. That we see that it's not really what Rashi is saying. He didn't change the name of it. He didn't change the book. But that's the question. Is that true? That in Judaism, that we follow rabbinic psak even if it's wrong? It seems not to be true to me, because if you look at the first Mishnah, and it's not my kasha, the Ramban, Nechman is the first one to ask the question. He says, the Ramban writes, the first Mishnah Hariyah says, if let's say the Beis Din HaGadol paskin something, they say you can eat this food and it turns out to be treif. And so it gets into how many people do it, but basically 51% of the people in the Eretz Yisrael eat it. So based on HaGadol, they have to bring a par helam, they have to bring a certain carbon. Basically, we see clearly from the Mishnah and Arios, if the rabbis make a mistake, they don't just go with it. That's it. You have to change it. Okay. If you thought that if it's not kosher, stop eating it. If they said turn on the lights, don't turn. In other words, the fact they said something, we don't have power of the Pope, that whatever we say works. That's not the way it works. You have a system. If they make a mistake, it's wrong, and then that's it. So therefore, how do we reconcile? On one half in the Sifri, it appears to say, like Herman Wouk saying, that even if they tell you right is left, so if they tell you something's wrong, you still follow it. And yet, we see that's not true. So how do we reconcile? So this parenthetic, Rav Chanan Wasserman says, you know what the pshat is? That where do we see we follow the rabbis even when they're wrong? What does it mean, I should say, when they tell you left is right and right? Where do we do this? We do it even today when Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot fall out on Shabbos, the first day of Sukkot. When Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, biblically speaking, we have a mitzvah of hearing the shofar. Biblically speaking, we have a mitzvah to shake the four species, yet we don't. Because the Gemara tells us, because the rabbis were concerned, we're going to end up violating Shabbos, so they stopped it. So we see that Yesh Koach B'Yach HaKomim, in other words, the rabbis have certain powers. If you're having a Mac attack, and you have to have a Big Mac, that the rabbis can't tell you to have. But that's violating the Torah actively. But the rabbis could go against the Torah by telling you not to do something. So therefore, they could tell you, so therefore, it's the Rav Chanan, this is an example. They're telling you, right, the Torah says, blow shofar. Rabbis say, no, that's what Rav Chanan writes. But getting back, how do we reconcile this apparent contradiction? So the Ramban says very simple. You have to read the Sifri probably. You're missing one important word in the Sifri. If it's nira keinecha, if it appears to you that the rabbis are saying left is right, then you have to follow. In other words, if you know, basically, if you're a Talmud Chacham, you're a Torah scholar, you know this person is wrong, then of course you don't follow. That's the Mishnah Hariyas. You know they're wrong, you don't follow mistakes. That's not Judaism. You're wrong, that's it. You change it, and you correct it, and you do the right thing. But what the Sifri is saying is, you're a Balabas, you're an average individual, and the rabbi says something in a base. Oh, they don't know what they're talking about. I learned in fourth grade this or whatever. And so obviously, if it's near, if you think, don't worry, we don't care what you think. As we say, it's not talk radio. You know, talk radio, you call in Everyone's opinion is equal because the whole one hosting the show doesn't know any more than you do either. Everyone has an opinion. And of course, if you go to your psychiatrist, you go for your spouse, your family, it's important to hear your opinions. But the same way, if we're having a... we're together with all the chemists in the world, and I think it works this way. I don't know anything about chemistry, so obviously not all opinions are equal. Who cares what I think? I don't know anything about chemistry. So obviously, the fact you have a fourth grade education and you think the rabbi made a mistake, who cares what you think? So that's how the Ramban writes. If you think they're wrong, don't worry. Go with the rabbis. They know more than you. But if you know they're wrong, then of course you don't follow them. That's the way the Ramban learns. Comes along Rav Moshe Glasner. He has a very interesting interpretation. He wants to reconcile like this. He says, he wants to make the following distinction. He says, it depends. Let's say spontaneous, we know it's wrong now. That's a given. But what about the question is, when Bizman HaGemara, what did the cutting edge of science say about spontaneous? When the rabbis were paskening the Shaila in the Gemara, what did the science of the time say? So according to Rav Moshe Glasner, he says, if at the time of the Gemara, everyone knew spontaneous generation was a joke, it didn't exist, and then the rabbis paskin based on wrongful evidence they had right in front of them, then you throw out the halacha. That if everyone knew there was nothing spontaneous, and the rabbis said the reason why you ought to kill kinas, lice, so then you don't listen to them, it's wrong, that's it, you throw it out. But however, if the rabbis, Bizman HaGemara, were basing it on the science of the times, the leading scientist, the leading doctor said this is what it is, so even if later on science changed, and now the cutting edge said there is no such thing, but once if the halacha was based on the accepted principles of halacha and science, so even though it's wrong now, it still applies. What's the logic? Why is it, if it's wrong, it's wrong. What do I care whether the rabbis during the time of the Gemara got it right? If right now it's wrong, why should it make a difference? So this touches on a principle of the Chazon Ish, that we have a tradition, this is the Gemara, before this Chazon Ish, we have a tradition that there's going to be 6,000 years, that we have the first 2,000 years are years of Tov, of null and void nothingness. The 2,000 to 4,000 are years of Torah, this is the Medrash, the Gemara, in Sanhedrin, and the last 2,000 years are years of the Mashiach, days of the Messiah. So what does that mean? That, in fact, there's a Gemara where Rabbi Akiva, and speaking of, that's one opinion what happened, we know Rabbi Akiva during this time period was 24,000 students. So the Gemara just says, it's very vague, it says they didn't treat each other properly. Rishami seems to say that is because they got killed in the Bar Kokhba revolt. Rabbi Akiva believed that Bar Kokhba was the Mashiach, was the Melech HaMashiach, and therefore, and that's where many say that's why all the 24,000 were killed. So the rabbi said Rabbi Akiva had every right to believe it. He was Becheskes Mashiach. The Rambam gives you all the rules what a Mashiach looks like, so I'm allowed to believe in one until that person dies. I'm not getting into details. Once the person, he might have Lubavitch Rebbe, he might have been the Mashiach, but now that he's dead, he's not the Mashiach anymore. You know, obviously some Mashiachs might disagree, but that's the normative approach in Judaism, that a Mashiach can't, there is a Rashi in Sanhedrin they like quoting, but the normative approach in Judaism is one, so therefore it was okay for Bar Kokhba, for him to think Bar Kokhba was the Mashiach. However, once he did something, he knew he wasn't anymore. So the rabbi said to Mariki, what are you talking about? The Mashiach's not coming because we have it. They said to Rakiva, grass will be growing on your forehead, in other words, you'll be buried a long time in the grave before the Mashiach comes, because we know we have a tradition. Apparently Rakiva didn't have it. Mashiach can't come to the year 4,000. So that's what they told us. So the question is, what does it mean between 2,000 and 4,000 Torah? So now we're not learning Torah anymore. All the Torah that's going on in the world, that's not Torah. So what does that mean? So the Chazon Ish has an interesting he's not for sure. He doesn't know for sure, but this is what he thinks. This is his suggestion. What does it mean that the years of 2,000, so for certain principles, certain halachas, let's say the one he talks about is Trefa, like we discussed with the Drusa, that during these 2,000 years, the Torah developed different principles, and therefore, because the Chazanish mentions, there are many animals in the Gemara that we call trefa, in other words, that they're going to die within the year. But if you look at these same animals today, we know it's not true. There's many cases of trefa, where the Gemara calls them trefa, that they're going to die within the year. But today, modern science says it's not true anymore. Yet the Chazanish says, but the halachas are, by trade, we still view them as treif, I, why? If it's wrong, it's wrong. So he goes into that during the years 2000 and 4000, there are certain principles that were koveya in halacha. That can never change. In other words, so when they came up to the definition, so again, this touches on another fundamental question which ties into this. When the Gemara talks about something medical or scientific, is this purely based on scientific knowledge? No halachic tradition at all? Or no, that even when the science of the Gemara, it was based on a tradition. So obviously, the Chazanish is definitely saying by treifa anyway, the treifa was based on a tradition, halacha Moshe Mitzrayim or a Kabbalah, and therefore, during whatever was true during the year 2000 and 4000, that's the definition of treifa. And the reality thing doesn't make a difference. Regarding the laws of treifa, that's the way the halacha was set up. So for instance, another example would be, let's say, when do we have to say Kriya Shema? It says B'shav Baka, when we lie down over Kumech, when we get up. Okay. So the Gemara tells us, what does it mean? So the kings used to sleep until 3 hours, but look around today. I know many people who sleep a lot later than 3 hours. Four people sleep to noon, so we should change the Zman Kriya Shema. If the Torah tells us you could, when you get up, so obviously, again, so the answer is no, because during that year, it's not true for everything, but for certain halachas, it was built into the system, that can't be changed. So even if, so to speak, the physical reality is different, we don't have a right. So treifa, that's what the Chazanish talks about. So that's what Rav Glaser seems to be working with. So if at the time, the spontaneous generation was the accepted scientific norm, so when Chazal, so again, so you work with Rav Desker, you'll come up with another reason why this halacha is true, even if the science, because that was based, it's not just only based on science, it was based on a tradition, this is the halacha. Okay, the science is wrong, we have to come up with another scientific reason why this is true, why it isn't true. But that by treifa can change. Halacha, that's what he says here. If it was based on erroneous scientific information, everyone knew in the Gemara, so then he says, that's the Mishnah. If it's wrong, it's wrong. But if it's based, that's what he means, you follow left is right, right is left, that if at the time of the Gemara it was right, that halacha was koveya, and that's the definition of life, you know, or whatever the case may be. And then he said, and therefore, even though it's wrong, it's right. In other words, even though left is right, because it's built into, we don't have the power of the Pope, we can't just go ahead and change things. So as we'll see, that's going to be the question. We're going to see differences. Every mitzvah is different. So treifa is clear. Everyone agrees treifa. It wasn't just based on medical knowledge. It was based on tradition. And therefore, that's not going to change. But the interesting machlokas, Rav Moshe and the Chazanish, is what about a human being? Because the Gemara says clearly treifa. So that's the machlokas, Rav Moshe and the Chazanish. The definition of a treifa by a human being. In other words, if the Gemara gives different conditions, a human being will die within a year. But we see they're not true anymore today. So the Chazanish says, no, it doesn't make a difference. That was built in this. And Rav Moshe says, no, it wasn't. It says, by animals, that's where the Gemara was koveh ad halacha. But by humans, how they spoke to the doctors at that time, and the definition of death and that was based on what they got from the scientists. So he said, that, he says, Rav Moshe writes, we're not dependent on the Gemara. So we have to go through case by case to know. And again, it's always the devil in the detail. How do you know whether, so when it's something, if it's just, so it seems to be clear, if it's just based on medical science, then we have a right, once we see that medical science is different today, then we can discuss discarding the halacha. I'll give you a clear-cut case where we do it. Speaking of Milo, which is also this week's Parasha Tazria, Isha Kisadu Yelda Zacha, so there's a halacha by Mila, Marchitzin Esakatan Belufneha Mila Ben Lacha Mila. There's a halacha that you wash, Bismana Gemara, Bismana Mishnah, that in order to avoid infection, and if you don't do this, you are endangering the child. You had to have warm water, hot water, to wash the child before the circumcision, and have hot water to wash the child after. That took away the infection. In fact, it's interesting, Machlokes Ramban Balamor, let's say, everyone agrees if you did the mila and then the water spilled, okay, the kid's in danger, you go ahead and heat up that water. Either get a non-Jew or do it yourself. But this interesting Machlokes, let's say the water spills, the water you have for after the mila spills before you do the mila, should you go ahead and do the mila and then put yourself in a situation? So that's the Machlokes Ramban Balamor. But either way, so the luck is, that's clear. And in fact, you even machal Shabbos for this. The Gemara comes along the Rambam, who lived in the 1500s. I don't know how much better the sanitary conditions were between the Rambam and the Gemara. I certainly know between now and our time, they're a lot better. The Rambam writes, we don't have to do it anymore. We have antiseptics, we have other medication. There's no need to wash the katan. And he says, you can no longer wash, we don't even do it during the week, but certainly you're not allowed to machal, even though the Gemara says you can machal Shabbos by heating up hot water, today we know we no longer need it. Therefore, the Beis Yosef and Shulchan Aruch writes, the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Kairo writes, we do not do it, we're not allowed to heat up hot water. That's a case where it's clearly, it was based on the science of the time. We reject that no longer, not that the science was wrong, we have other medications that are better. And therefore, that's a clear case where the halacha changes. The science at the time, they needed the hot water. Today, we have other antiseptics, and therefore, we don't even do it during the week. Certainly, we're not allowed a machal Shabbos to heat up hot water, even though the Gemara says it, because we know we don't need it anymore. You had a question?
Yeah, I was going to. So the first machloket that you pointed out is that if you spill the water, do you even start the circumcision? If you pre-spilled the water.
Right, there's two waters. Let's assume you washed the baby before you did that. Now you're about to do the circumcision, and the kids are running around, they kick over the bucket of water. So I haven't done, he's pre-washed already, he's ready to go. But I know right now, if I do the bris mila, I'm going to need new water, which I don't have now. So I'll know, I have to put myself in a situation where I'm going to have to cook up. So everyone agrees, if you did the meal, you have to do it, be permitted, but you don't put yourself in a situation where you know you're going to have to, right. So the Ramban says, no, there's a mitzvah of doing bris meal on day 8, let the chips fall where they may,
right.
I do the meal, and if I have, and the Balamor says, no, you have to be roas hanolad. I don't have to make cheshbonis to next month, but if I know for sure, in the next 30 seconds, so he says, you don't put yourself in a situation, and therefore he says you wait until Sunday.
Yeah, but then, okay.
And that's the way the Shulchan Aruch passes, like the Machaber. We don't, it's not, that specific case doesn't apply because we don't have it. You know, that gets into the question of Shomer Shabbos residency, non-Shomer, putting, that's part of the discussion, whether you got to put yourself in a situation where you know that even though once you're in it, you're allowed to do it, you got to put yourself in a situation where you'll be permitted to desecrate the Shabbos, whether you should, that touches on but there's a lot more details to that it's a different topic, but in terms of putting yourself in a situation where it might lead, where you're going to have to do things on Shabbos. But that's clear case. What isn't as clear, we'll see, is staying on the Mila topic, very controversial today, and different people, different children, tragic, dying, they say, again, from the herpes, because people are doing a mitzitza, sucking out the blood, prepare with the mouth. In other words, this is go back a step. It's on the back page, 133b. You could look it up on your own time. But the Gemara says that someone, a mohel, who doesn't do mitzitza, a mohel who doesn't do, there's different parts to the mila. There's the mila, cutting off the foreskin. There's the priya, revealing the membrane. So that, those two are clearly part of the mila. Mal v'lo parak ilo mal. So the Gemara says there's another part, mitzitza, that you suck out the blood, and they thought that you suck out the blood because you avoid blood clotting, etc., which doctors say that's not the case anymore. But that was the assumption. So the Gemara says, if a moel does not do mitzitza, you throw him out of there. You fire him. It seems very harsh. Someone's working for you, they make a mistake and you get rid of them? So the Gemara says, no. It's because you're putting the child in Suffolk Sakana. It's not a regular mistake. We warn them. We give them chances. If you're putting someone in danger, that we have no zero tolerance for. And if he doesn't do mitzvah, so we see from the Gemara that mitzitza definitely had a hygienic role. The question is, it doesn't say explicitly in the Gemara, but the implication of the Gemara is the purpose of mitzitza is for health reasons. So if you assume mitzitza is purely for health reasons, so then we can entertain what we said about the hot water. If the only reason for mitzitza is to make sure the child is healthy, today with medical science we could come up with a lot of better ways to keep the child. The many Gentiles who get circumcised daily and they don't do mitzitza and they seem to be pretty healthy. So we could find many antiseptics, better stuff than... So if the whole purpose of mitzitza was just for health, we could entertain throwing mitzitza out. That there are some who say, you know, the various Yisrael, that's why Hasidim don't even let that sefer into their Beis HaMedrash, because he said other things. He entertains, not that he concludes that way, but he entertains, certainly maybe not doing mitzitza on Shabbos, but sir, even during the week, one could, but that's on the table, but no reputable mohel today will not do mitzitza, but that's on the table. If that was true, that the only because the reason is because it's not 100% clear that mitzitza is only for health reasons. Some say, Rav Avram, you know, it's fitting since it's Yom HaAtzmaut this week. We want to quote Rav Avram Isaac HaKohen Cook, who what you would think he would be on the more moderate side in this, but he actually was a very big mitzitza bepeh guy. He again. Well, maybe today with medical science saying what it does, maybe today he'd change his opinion on it, whether he do mitzitza. But he was, it makes sense because he's into Kabbalah. So, but interesting, just to give you a quote, you know, you can read it yourself in this paragraph. He basically says that the most medical science can do is create a suffix in halacha. In other words, medical science is always changing, not changing in a negative way. The part of science is you're always growing and changing, you're finding new things. He says, at best, it can only create a doubt. When halacha tells me something, they're telling me with assurance. So therefore, he's not a big science guy. He says it's enough. If it's a suffix, a kind. If science says something's danger, then you definitely take it into account. But he points out, he says, he was a big mitzitza bepeh guy. So the question is like this. The Gemara says, mitzitza is definitely for health, whether it's only for health reasons we could discuss. So others say that we see it's not true, that because, as we say, the many Gentiles who are circumcised daily, and they seem pretty healthy. Others say, you can't bring me a proof. The Gemara just says it's a health reason. It doesn't say, how do you know? Maybe at age of 20 the person gets sick, or 18, have you done a study to show that, who says, doesn't mean that the child's going to die, right? Maybe there'll be long term impact. You can never prove or disprove that, who knows? No one's ever done a study on anyone who didn't do a mitzitza, what happened at age 18 to 25. And some say it's a spiritual thing, it's a suffix sakana, you're going to become a api courage, you're going to become a non, in other words, so people want to learn the Gemara differently. It's not a They wanted to preserve mitzitza. It's not just help. So either way, so the shaila is like this. So here's a case where the Gemara says you do mitzitza for health reasons. And now today, a mitzitza bepeh, many claim it's just the opposite. Not only aren't you making the child healthy, you're endangering the child. And there are unfortunate cases today where herpes B, whatever the details are, where children have died. You know, again, it's not foolproof, but they claim, because this Moel did a mitzitza bepeh, and their children died. So you can't disprove it. You know, you can never prove anything 100%. But clearly, it seems to be, I spoke to many doctors, and many doctors tell me they think mitzitza bepeh, from a health reason, should not be, you know, not passing shayas. Obviously, I want to know what they think from a medical point of view. And many people think of mitzitza bepeh, you are putting the child into sakana. So you have a case where it's the opposite. The Gemara tells me by doing mitzitza, it's a health issue. And now now medical science, so what it is, obviously, so today, it's, so again, so if it was just health issue, we'd get rid of mitzitza, period. but we assume it's more than just a health. Some Rishonim say it's part of the mitzvah milah. So most, I wouldn't say most, but many today, many poskim today say we do mitzitza, but we do it bekli. In other words, you have to keep mitzitza. You have to suction out the blood, but there's a certain vessel you use, and therefore you cover it. You make everyone, well, you don't make everyone happy, but you make many people happy. You are preserving mitzitza. At the same time, you're not putting the child in extra danger. And there are those who are in the mitzitza bepek camp today, and they say no. That apparently they assume it's still not a, it's not a proven danger, and therefore they say it's a halacha moshe misinai. It's a kabbal. We have to do a bepek shomrei mitzvah. You know, again, I spoke to my cousin who's going to Nicole and Torah Badas. I know Rebelsky.
We just had the moral tested.
You know.
You just test them off.
No, but I thought everyone, but most people, most 40, 50-year-old men, you know, and have it, don't have it anyway. But either way, but the, you know, the question is, if right, even if he has it, the question is how you transmit it, but you're right. So I asked him, because I know Rebelsky asked me to hit his bris, my cousin, and I know he's a Mohan. I know Rebelsky's a big Talmud, he's not a Chassid either. I asked him, so he tells me Rebelsky still does Mitzitza Bepeh. So I asked him, I said, so I asked him, so what's the pshat? Is it, you're telling me he thinks it's dangerous? And no, so obviously, again, he was just speculating, but I told him to speak to Rebelsky and get back to me. He hasn't got back to me yet. But I said, so I was thinking less. I said, what's the pshat? So I said, so I pressed him. I said, you're telling me, okay, so he wants to say, he thinks it's not proven enough that it's a danger. And therefore, you have a halacha, you have to do what they assume, you have to do mitzitza bepeh. The medical, it's like Rav Kook, the medical thing is only in doubt, I'm still going to go. So I just pressed, I said, okay, so let's say it was proven. So I just want to know, and what the mitzitza bepeh, I'm not making any judgment calls, I just want to know. I said to you, let's say it's proven that medical says it is a danger, so are they still going to do it, or are they going to stop? So you didn't have an answer for me. So I'm just raising the question aloud, I don't have an answer. I'd like to assume I do have an answer that they wouldn't do it, but I'm just raising the question. I want to know, for those in the mitzitza bepek camp, I don't think it's yarov veil. It's not one of the mitz. First of all, mitzitza is not even part of the mila. Mobile, even if it is part of the mila, it's still not mayaki. Mobile lo para ki lo mo. In other words, so it's not like you don't have a bris. I'm just throwing it out. I can't imagine one has to risk their life. And forget, you're risking the kid's life, not yours, that to do a mila. Again, so I'm just thinking a lot of, you know, if I want to get answers from the mitzitza bepek camp. Maybe they'll agree and say you're right. But right now, they're saying it's not in that level, and that's why. What about your who is it? Your which best and which is the moel? Is you relate? Is that no? This, oh, not yours. There's another one, right? So I guess mitzitza bekli seems to be a nice compromise again. But if you hold a mitzitza bepek. Is halacha moshe misina? Obviously, it's not a good compromise, and therefore they're assuming. And in fact, I read an article. They have their doctors claiming that it's not a danger. So it's not an, or let's say it's not of enough of a sakana. You know, again, then you get into what's considered a suffix sakana. Is it 1 in 1,000, 1 in 1,000,000, 1 in 100? That's a separate discussion. What is considered a suffix sakana in halacha? So I know Rebelsky is, I'm just using him as an example, because I know he's a big Talmud Chacham, he's someone who has, you know, common sense, so I can't imagine he's doing something that he thinks is, so I'm assuming he's working, he has his doctors, I'm sure he had to check into it, that say it's not enough halachically, you know, he spoke to different doctors, and based on his knowledge of halacha, he's claiming at this point that it's not enough of a danger, though, that we don't stop doing mitzitza bepeh. That's what I assume that's his opinion is, yeah.
So would it satisfy both camps? Okay, you have the mohel do the technical parts, and then you have somebody else do the mitzitza part, maybe...
Right, but why mohel knows to do it? That's not the issue. I mean,
you have someone who you know, maybe a family member do the mitzitza part, that way you do the mitzitza, and you do the technical parts properly. That, you know, in a way that you don't know who the mohel is, you don't know.
Oh, you mean
who's
you're
taking.
Saying no? But I'm saying that you mean. Oh, you're saying.
So the mohel doesn't.
Oh, you're saying have the family member do mitzitza bepeh, you mean?
Right.
Okay. No, yeah. So that I've heard that. You know, I've heard that suggestion in terms of that.
How does that change?
In terms of, I don't know if that's going to change. Is that going
to
make
no,
it?
No. But I mean, so for example, you're
saying it's a less of a chance if it comes.
Well, the Mohel goes around doing this to a lot of people, right?
You know, I was saying.
Yeah, but the Mohel's not going to catch it from a baby. It's like the Mohel has a cold sore.
Yeah, but you don't want. Okay, there's a whole. First of all, there's a whole bunch of different things going on.
In fact,
like, an HIV positive mother. And this guy's touching, you know, the blood of a child.
Unless he's doing rapid fire breathing, you don't catch HIV like in your mouth. Unless you have a cut.
So if you have blood in somebody's, okay, wait a second. We have an infectious disease specialist sitting at our table.
Mm-hmm.
If you have somebody's blood in your mucous membrane and it's an HIV positive mother, can you get HIV?
Yeah, theoretically possible.
But unlikely.
The risk is low, but it exists.
Right, so you'd say like 10%?
No, 20%?
Much
less. Like,
less
than 1%.
Okay. Couldn't this be easily resolved with like a straw?
Right.
No, that's
like
some kind of tube?
Yeah, that's what we do. Yeah, it is. That's what we do. That's what they do. In fact, I think there is some source they say about mitzitza. You should give a good coven to your friend by giving him the mitzitza. There is like different...
You're right in that sense. It doesn't matter if the mohel goes doing 100 babies because it's... It doesn't matter.
Simply they wash their mouths out in between. I mean, they're not going.
Right, exactly.
It's the baby who you're worried about.
Yeah, so this.
But if the Mohel has herpes, it doesn't matter if he washes his mouth.
Exactly.
Not,
yeah. So let's just let's summarize. We have a lot. You know, we could have another class on this topic, different continuing.
Okay,
let me just summarize. So we pointed out. So basically, the Gemara says that one could kill lice on Shabbos. It seems to be because the Gemara believed in spontaneous generation, and we know it's not true. So how do we deal with a case that? The Gemara says one thing based on erroneous scientific knowledge today. So we have different approaches. So one approach is, if we see that the science is wrong, so then the halacha changes also. That's approach number one. Approach number two is also perhaps that if science is wrong, if the Gemara is wrong, we don't follow it, but we have to check and see if there are other, you know, other scientific reading into the Gemara. So as Rav Shlomo Zalman says, that no, it wasn't that the Gemara was saying spontaneous generation, they were just saying like the bugs. If something which is invisible, it was so small, we view it as spontaneous generation, and therefore the halacha of killing lice still applies, you're allowed to. Or like Rav Deska said, killing lice is going to stay the same. If you can't come up with the reason if spontaneous generation is the wrong reason, then you come up with Rav Shlomo Zalman. So that approach is basically, in theory, if it's wrong, we're going to reject it, but we try to find other ways to interpret the Gemara. Another approach is like the Dor Ravi, the Chazanish, and know that sometimes we go right is left, left is right. If the Gemara was based on erroneous information, then that's it. We throw it out. But if it's based on the science at the time, it was correct. So perhaps like the Chazanish writes by Trefa, during those years, 2000 and 4000, the halacha was kovei, and therefore left is right, that even though physically speaking, medically speaking, it's wrong, but when the halacha was set up, that's what we have to follow, like the laws of Trefa. So, you know, so those are some, and we see, and also another fundamental question is, when the Gemara talks about medical information, is it purely based on the scientific knowledge of that day, or is there some tradition? So it depends. When it came to washing off the, when it comes to Trefa, everyone agrees, you can't change it. By trefa of a human being, it's a machlokas chazanish ramosha. If you can, ramosha that you can. It's only based on the science. When it came to washing the katan, everyone says you get rid of it. We don't wash the katan with hot water. When it comes to mitzitza, we could discuss it. But everyone, practically, we do mitzitza. So we do mitzitza b'kli instead of b'peh. And then, therefore, just to conclude, so we follow. I agree we should follow the rabbis of the Talmud. And just like the rabbis of the Talmud spoke to the doctors and scientists at that time, that's what we have to do. We have to speak to the doctors and the scientists of our time, and we can't be like ostriches putting our heads in the sand and just ignoring all these modern technologies and check. We believe that complements the Torah. The Torah and science go hand in hand. And therefore, we continue to speak to the doctors of our time. And therefore, and that's why, as we see, many, many cures in the Gemara, many, many of these medical therapies that the Gemara says, you're out of Machal Shabbos, where you take it, today we reject them. Even the Rambam threw them out because that was based on the science of the time. And today, obviously, we know it's wrong. Just to conclude, that's why Tosfos writes, the Gemara Moed Kun talks about, it was assumed then that when is the healthiest time to eat fish? Right before it's about to spoil. So if it takes fish a week to spoil, so 6 days and 23 hours in, that's the healthiest time. Today we say, no, the fresher the fish, the healthier. So obviously, and the Rashba writes, Domo Barosho. Anyone who follows those medical therapies of the Gemara, you're bringing it upon yourself. We don't accept those type of therapies, that type of food. In fact, I'll conclude with a Mishko HaChassidus story. In fact, on the issue of, you know, when you do things, you got to have things in balance and a big picture. And that's why, let's say the story, there's this rich man, and he basically was very stingy, and he hated having guests over. And one time his wife is getting on his case, it's before Pesach. Come on, we have to have someone for the Seder. He really didn't want to, but he said, okay. And then she said, okay, but now you're going to have to buy fish, because we have to serve them fish at the Seder. Oh, do we have to? Yeah, okay. So he went to the fish store, and he goes and he starts discussing, oh, too expensive, this and that. And the fish guy's getting very fed up with this guy. He says, you know what? He takes this fish, spoiled fish he has in the garbage. He takes, okay, here, give me a dollar, or whatever, you can have all this fish. Oh, he's so happy. He comes home. He puts a lot of spices on the fish, you know, cover it up. And he goes to shul, and, you know, there's a list of people, and he has the gabbai, and he takes one of the poor people home with him. And he comes to the Seder. Okay, they have the Seder. The Shulchan Aruch, he's serving the fish. So the poor guy says, how come no one else is having fish? Oh, we don't like fish. Okay, so he eats the fish, and that's it. So he comes to shul the next day, and he hears, oh, well, this poor man, he's in the hospital. Something happened to him. So he goes back home and tells his wife, you know, you never believe it. This guy who we had last night is sick in the hospital. And I don't know, he looked pretty healthy when he left the house last. The wife said, maybe you had something to do with it. Maybe you should go visit him. I guess he had some conscience. Okay, I'll go. He goes to the hospital and he visits him. Oh, hi, how you doing? Okay. And he goes back. He goes back to shul next day, Chol HaMoed. He sees a big sign up, the funeral of the death of this guy. And he goes, tells his wife and says, you know what? I don't know what happened. And he was healthy. Now, I think you better go to the funeral because I think you might have played it. Okay, I'll go to the funeral. So he comes back for the funeral with a big smile on his face. So the wife said, what are you smiling so much about? He says, it's so amazing. You know what? For a loony, for a dao, you know what? I got the mitzvah of Hachnasis Archim, the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, and the mitzvah of Havalas Hameis. The point being is, obviously, people have to have balance. You know, you get, like, for instance, like there's someone I know who's a descendant of the Shua, so the custom is not to eat turkey. So they have a tradition not to eat turkey because they need a masorah. So he told me that he said, you know what, I have relatives of mine that they won't eat turkey because they're descendants of the Shua, but they'll eat treif on Yom Kippur. And with the point being, not eating turkey is a minig, or it's much less, but the point is, you have to have the balance. In terms of, you have to have the balance, you need the big picture in life, what's important, what's not. So obviously you have to be able to see the details over. So obviously, you know, there are many health issues, and therefore, we'll have to go through the different therapies of the Gemara and that. So, you know, so either the next time we could continue on this topic, give other examples, or we'll see, we'll pick a different topic, either way.